comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, you've been canceled. No, not from your subscription to your favorite streaming service or magazine. Celebrities, folks in the public eye like Don Lemon, Rihanna, Aesop Rocky, they of late know it all too well. Cancel culture. Shunned, ostracized, dismissed, punishment, accountability. What are the merits and consequences of cancel culture, if any? Tonight we are talking about it. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Joining us for this conversation tonight is Professor Jennifer Thomas. She's the associate professor at the Kathy Hughes Howard University School of Communication, and she's also the journalism coordinator at the School of Communication. On the phone line with us is Charles Ellison. He's the publisher of The B-Note. Again, phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. Cancel culture is our focus tonight. Professor Thomas, cancel culture. Don Lemon. First, you, black executive producer at CNN, so your paths cross with Don Lemon. Mm-hmm. I probably should set up Don Lemon. He had some things to say. In case the audience didn't know, Don Lemon was back on the air today after being off the air for a few days. Don Lemon had said about Nikki Haley, who announced she is running for president, a former governor of South Carolina, and Nikki Haley had said, listen, I think that anybody running for the presidency now should have mental competency tests. Anyone over the age of 75. That means Donald Trump. That means the current president. Nikki Haley is 51. Anyway, Don Lemon says on his morning show, well, Nikki Haley isn't in her prime. He said that a woman is only considered to be in their prime in the 20s, 30s, and maybe their 40s. Blowback, big time, social media everywhere, and within CNN, he was, I don't even know if he would call it suspended, Jennifer, but he was taken off the air and he returned today. Tell me what you think about this. You are a professor. You are a professional in the world of journalism, in the media, social media, all of it. What are your thoughts on Don Lemon and i.e. cancel culture?
Right. Well, first, I want to say good evening and thank you so much for this opportunity to be here with you. So, yes, this is an interesting story. I do know Don. We worked together in the past. And I will say, you know, we have to remember Don had his own show with his own name. He had editorial control over whatever he said. And he said a lot of comments and commenting about popular culture, the news. And being that it was his show, he could say that, right? Now, fast forward, as you mentioned in the introduction, now he has two co-anchors. He is no longer on his show, and he's there making this comment, which if he were on his show, I don't think it would have been received the same way necessarily, because it would have been more like a commentary. Well, we're talking about someone having to that's not in their prime, or someone that needs to take a test if they're beyond this age, then I could see him saying then, well, what about her? If that's the case, she might not be considered in her prime because she's 51, and some say. So I think what he was trying to say and what he said and how it was received did not work. I think he should have known better, because he's been at CNN long enough to know better. And with regards to cancel culture, though, when it comes to this particular case, I don't know that that would be warranted for Don, for this particular case. There was an old saying I used to say back in the day, you know, I've been called worse by better, right? There have been many more outlandish things that have been said in commenting about, you know, a story than what he said. He did apologize. It was sexist on its face, yes. He should not have said it, yes. Did he intend to say something sexist and to offend? No. I think he was trying to make a point of what she was saying against President Biden and Trump. And, of course, she was trying to make a point. Well, did we hear the outcries of ageism on
Very
her
good
behalf?
Point. Very
you
good
know?
Point.
So I think that sometimes it's lopsided when we talk about cancel culture, who it's coming from, and what's accepted by some isn't necessarily accepted by others.
Charles Ellison, your thoughts, let's stay sort of with Don Lemon. And I think Professor Thomas makes an interesting point. Sometimes, you know, we can sort of go in through the prism of who's saying it and who's responding to it. He's sitting on the set. He's next to, he's bookended by two women. You know, we can argue that it was, you know, an ignorant, uninformed statement, but still in the setting that it was in, I think it just added more oomph to it. What's your sense of what Don Lemon had to say? And does that fall, what has happened to him, sort of the punishment and the accountability, does it fall under that umbrella of cancel culture in your mind?
I mean, in my mind, you know, it's a very complex issue, you know, because what we're calling as cancel culture or a cancel culture moment, you know, particularly as it relates to what was going or what's happening right now with Don Lemon, sometimes it's really just the evolution of public conversation. Things that we thought were appropriate to say or we thought were cute to say 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, for some of us in sort of that Gen X bracket, mm-hmm. or things that we heard our baby boomer parents say and some of the things they did were not appropriate at that time. And we should be realizing that we're evolving as a civic society. We should endeavor to evolve as a civic society to make sure that we're not traumatizing people, especially we're not traumatizing women through the things that we say. So, you know, does it rise to the occasion, what he said, does it rise to the occasion of a moment where he gets suspended, especially when we've seen Don Lemon through the years on CNN get exposed to or be even like subtly attacked by all sorts of disrespectful comments about, say, for example, black people. Nobody was, you know, nobody did anything to defend Don Lemon in those moments, right? And Don Lemon, he would take it on the chin. But, you know, I do find it, and so I think there is another conversation about, you know, this suddenly, oh, we want to suspend Don Lemon for saying something about also a person, Nikki Haley, who, you know, has some very, as far as it relates to black people and it relates to the current political moment that we're in, you know, politically, she's very suspect herself, mm-hmm. right? You know, making statements in her presidential announcement about America's not a racist country. Like, really? Why'd you change your name? So, you know, but that's another conversation, of course. But, you know, I'm just saying that it suddenly we find this moment where, oh, we have to defend someone with very sinister political MAGA white nationalist aligned views like Nikki Haley, for real. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, we're calling it cancer culture when really all it is it's us as a society really struggling to evolve and get better with our public discourse and conversation in a way that's not alienating and traumatizing people like it had been doing for so long. And especially we as a community, we know all about that traumatization and that alienation as a result of public conversation that oftentimes in our history led to real hostilities and violence. But, so, you know, in retrospect, should he have said something like that? Of course not. He should not have. You know, and I say this as the father of daughters. You know, you have to be very careful, you know, what you're saying, and especially what you're saying, you know, in terms of how we as men are describing women. That's none of our business to be saying certain things like that. Well, and so, you know, in retrospect, he should not have said it.
Professor Thomas, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, phone lines are open. Professor Thomas, does it matter who says it in terms of the response and whether or not there needs to be accountability? And what I mean by that is we often see this cancel culture, or whatever you want to call it, sort of the blowback is on public officials, public people. Mm-hmm. If just regular folks are on Twitter and social media and they say something, does that cancel culture really apply to them? Or is it really about people who are public persons?
Well, no, I think that, you know, when you become a celebrity or when you're someone people know, or if you're an elected official or if you're in front of the camera, you lose that sense of your privacy. You're now a public figure. So what you say holds weight. Whether or not it's your personal opinion, you're representing more than yourself now. So by virtue of, in this case with Don making that statement, that's why CNN had to make a statement, because he's a CNN employee. And even when, and you know, this is something we share with the students all the time, even if you're commenting on social media and saying something and you're like, expressions are my own, or, you know, you put the hashtag and put the line through it and you're like, this does not reflect, that doesn't matter. You know, so I think that when you are a public official or you're in the public eye, people weigh what you say differently because of that, you know, because people are watching and people are listening, and you're representing more than just your personal, even if it is your personal opinion, you know. So you have to be very careful, and it can put you in that situation. But again, back to him. And that's why I said before, to what our other guest was saying, you know, he was, if, as it were, clapping back at with what Nikki Haley said by making a comparison about her. I don't think he meant it. Don was raised by a mother in Louisiana. He talks about all the time, raised by women. So he does know better. And I think his point was lost in, you know, by how he said it, and he should not have said it. But in terms of rising to the level of cancel culture as a person that's known, I think it's probably unfair, but that's just the way it is. You know, we're in this social world now where everything you say can and will be scrutinized and held against you in the court of public opinion.
Charles, is there any difference between cancel culture and political correctness? Do they live in the same family? Are they the same thing?
I do feel like, you know, cancel culture is, you know, being framed as, you know, sort of a new phase of, or it's really just a new version of what was called at one time political correctness.
Because you don't really use that, we don't hear that term too often anymore, right?
We don't. And so we're calling it cancel culture. And, really, you know, and we have to be careful here now. We have to be careful how we're using these different phrases and terms that have been popularized, that have been started and instigated by forces that are originally anti-black. Political correctness, anti-black political forces.
Why can't I use the N-word anymore? Why can't we say these things that we used to say? You know, I would say that all the time, to be quite frank.
Exactly.
It really, political correctness is saying, you mean I can't say all those nasty things I used to say? And I would always go, well, is political correctness a bad thing? Shouldn't we not want to say those things anymore?
Right. We should not want to say those things, because when it was acceptable to say those things, you know, particularly for, you know, my mother's family, my grandmother, who partly raised me, grew up in the segregated South. You know, they talked about, I was old enough to still, I was around, my great grandparents were around. They talked about that, about the way that white people talked to black people as a standard at that time. That's and it led to violence and all sorts of hostilities and the complete subjugation and oppression of an entire population of people. So yeah, we do want to keep things correct and make it some of these things do need to be canceled out and need to be locked away into a vault in ancient history. So, you know, we have to be very careful about how we, especially as a community, as a people, are adopting that kind of language of political correctness, cancel culture, woke, you know, and then suddenly, you know, and that it's designed politically to do that, to reach that means where suddenly the whole conversation is distorted and our needs and our concerns as a black community are ignored.
Well,
stamped on.
Yeah, hold that thought for a minute, Charles, because I want to get to this before we jump over to the other side. And Jennifer, I did want to bring up the British Vogue cover. With Rihanna.
Absolutely.
And that has really blown up,
yes,
right? Rihanna is on the cover with A$AP Rocky. He's holding their baby. He's behind her. She's sort of holding his hand. She's in the front. And The Root, you know, had an article where they used the graphics, I guess, of one of these social media folks who put X's all over the paper and said, she's got her chest out. He's sort of sloping back. He's holding a baby. She's in the front. Folks are really, how would I define it? Almost like canceling masculinity, canceling Rihanna in terms of her approach. And a lot of this, many folks were saying, was coming from Black social media folks, Black Twitter.
Yeah.
What's your sense of that? And do you see that as really trying to cancel either Rihanna or cancel A$AP Rocky? Or how do you view that?
I don't see it as canceling that so much. I think, you know, in a way, it's complicated. So I think it's generational, too.
Mm.
You know, my class today, in fact, had the conversation about it. And many of them were like, I don't really understand what it is. You know, he's strong in his masculinity. He's supporting his wife. He's holding his holding his baby. But I think some people are not seeing the controversy and the complication at the history and the legacy behind what that type of picture might represent.
All right, I want you to hold that thought, and we want to continue the conversation on that. The professor has set it up. Hold you. I hear you, Charles, on the upside. I think you want to have something to say, but stay right there. We're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone line, that's you, Rob. Stay right there. We are going to get to you. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we're talking about cancel culture. What is it? Who does it apply to? How does it work? Professor Jennifer Thomas, she's the associate professor at the Kathy Hughes Howard University School of Communication, and she's also the coordinator of the journalism department at the School of Communication. And Charles Ellison, publisher of the B-Note. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Professor Thomas, I'm going to get back to your point real quick, but let me go to Rob, who's been on the line holding patiently. Rob, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Oh, my gosh. Good evening.
Uh-oh, Rob. It was just the way you started. Okay, now, Rob, remember, we only got a half an hour left on the show.
Look, I'm in my 60s.
Okay.
Long time ago, sticks and stones can break your bones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I was in the South recently, a couple of years from COVID, and I listened to D.L. Hughley on the station, and one of the things he said was interesting. He said, you know, we got all these acronyms and all these groups, these subculture groups. He says, the reason why these are made is because the parents knew that their offspring would not be able to take on the controversy, the name-calling, and all of that when they were growing up. So they created these groups and got legislation and gave them rights in order to be protected. Now, fast forward. I'm fat. I am fat. So what? I see it out there. We have to watch what we say now and watch how we address people. Look, you can only be canceled if you cancel yourself. In the words of 50 Cent, you can only be shamed. Shaming only happens when you feel ashamed. And that's it. So these people can cancel whatever they want to. And if the people who are being canceled understand who they are and stand on their truth, it wouldn't affect anything.
All right, Rob.
And that's just me.
Okay, let me let Professor Thomas jump in on that because I want to sort of take that to where you were finishing your point, Professor Thomas, because on the Rihanna A$AP Rocky story, you know, since then it's kind of like, well, they're not responding to it. They're living their best lives. They're not even sort of worrying about that. But I think you brought up an interesting point when you sort of framed it historically.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening there, right, with that picture and where we're going in terms of how we are seeing she's trying to be the man. He's being emasculated. What are we talking about within the Black community historically? So to go a little further with that.
Right. So I'll just say this, too. So, you know, it's a cover. There was a creative director. It's artistic, you might say. So you look and you know that art is subjective. So you look at it just aesthetically. Oh, this is a nice picture. Look at her coming out. You know, she's walking out. So we talked about that earlier. What does that photo represent? You know, everyone, you know, and the defenders of it rightfully say Rihanna's as kids say, a Billy, and he's a Millie, right?
Exactly. You so, want to tell the folks out there, you know, yeah, in our range what you mean.
A billionaire and versus a millionaire.
There you go. Okay.
So, yes, the article was about her and the feature was about her, and it shows how, you know, they together are raising this child. But as I mentioned earlier, you have to look at the historical framing of this. When you see, we are in the Black Girl Magic phase, right? Which I completely support and love. But then you look at historically with single women, or the woman always being the head of the household and having to do everything for herself, and the importance of the Black man in the role where he is the leader of a family. And what that represents and why that should be supported and celebrated. So when you look at it from that lens and you see, well, why is he in the background sort of slumped over? He's obviously not moving, and the shot showed her as she was walking. What does that represent? And then you look and see, okay, well, we have to examine the room, or who is the audience? Who's the audience of British Vogue? Will the people who are watching it know that, you know, this is just this beautiful artistic expression? Or are we missing a bigger or deeper image that's being portrayed that we don't even realize from seeing that picture?
What are your thoughts there, Charles? Are we overanalyzing what a bunch of some folks would say social media trolls have to say? I mean, you're going to see this all the time. Why are we even talking about it? You know, we don't know these people.
Right.
As they say, they're there in their basement, in their mom's basement, in the closet somewhere, having all these comments. Some guy said, you know, my wife is an awesome woman who does amazing things, but she wouldn't want me to become her housewife. Go right ahead.
That's a good point. You know, social media has completely ruined responsible and textured and intelligent public conversation, right? And, you know, what we need to be overanalyzing right now, especially in this day and age, is the impact of existential threats like climate crisis or white nationalism, the rise of fascism. I mean, those are things we need to, and so here we are, especially us as a community, all caught up in one, what is really a beautiful magazine cover of a Black family, and then a lot of us as Black people, we're forgetting the culture, the original culture, especially Rihanna's from the Caribbean. You know, she's a Caribbean woman, and Caribbean culture being, you know, even more closer to the original African culture that we all come from. And that was very matriarchal. It was very much like where the women were, you know, played dominant leadership positions. We see that naturally with Black women today.
So let me ask you this, Charles.
It's a natural thing for us to celebrate Black women being the lead and Black men supporting that. And sometimes Black men, we play leadership.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Charles, and I ask you this, and Professor Thomas, is it then, for lack of a better word, more dangerous for the Black community when we're talking about canceling and admonishing and ostracizing? Do we have to sort of walk a finer line with that? Do we have to be sort of more open about what we're doing, what we're saying, having more of a broader historical lens? I know we're asking a lot when talking about folks getting on social media, but you know where I'm going.
We should, you know, real quick, we should, because, I mean, we should be always sensitive to that. We should always be sensitive to the sensitivities of other peoples and other communities and other populations, considering what we've been going through for the past several hundred years. And to that last comment, the last gentleman was making, you have to tiptoe around. Hey, listen, if you're not a bully, if you mean well, if you know, you're contributing to the common good, you have nothing to worry about. Then you shouldn't be going around saying nasty things or bullying people in the first place. And if you're not that person doing that, either on social media or in person or in your office space, you really have nothing to worry about. And so, you know, we should be the last community or population of people embracing this notion of cancel culture, considering that for several hundred years, there has been a systematic effort to cancel us.
And still
so
is.
We need to be very careful about that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Phone lines are open, question or comment. We're talking about cancel culture. We're talking about punishment, accountability, who can say what, when can we say it, how does social media play a role in this? Jennifer, you know, Charles talked about social media, and I was going to ask you about that. And I know in your classrooms, you know, that is always a hot topic with these students now and what that means and the responsibility. And how do you address these conversations? Because I could hear some folks listening now going, you know what, Bramante, I mean, you're talking about this stuff. I mean, this is, again, this is just people just talking. Who are they? I know it's been democratized, and as Charles has said, it's the worst thing that's happened to us, social media. So how do we then frame those kind of conversations when it's not me, Bramante Bryant, who you can see, who has some kind of platform, and then you can critique me, when it's just anybody, everybody that we can't put a face or a name to?
Well, you know, we have to be realistic and see this, whether we like it or not, this whole notion of cancel culture is real, and we have seen people lose jobs from that, right? We've seen careers completely ruined. And I think it may have gone to an extent now that can somewhat be considered out of control, you know, where you can't say anything before someone says, cancel that. And to the points that have been made earlier, who's saying it? Who are these people that are, you know, rising these? What is the agenda behind that? But yeah, so when it comes to social media, we have to just be so very careful, because there is no limitation. There is no guarding of who's saying what or who's writing what. And we have to be very careful not to get caught up in that. And so that we don't find ourselves on the other side of that cancel culture. So a lot of students, you know, have a lot of very opinions about things, and especially, you know, for journalists. And we all know that when we were being trained as journalists, we, you know, one thing I always said is you would never know what I felt about something if you watch one of my one of my newscasts. My opinion had nothing to do with it, because guess what? The story isn't about
me.
But now it's completely opposite. Students want to, and it may be a generational thing, and maybe just because social media is so prevalent and everyone has access to it, everyone has to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to say something. And then when we see a Don Lemon, well, Don Lemon said it, and we see everyone else on these shows giving their opinions and side commentaries, which I don't agree with, then I think it opens the floodgates to allow these types of things to swell and to grow.
Charles, you had mentioned, and again, I think it's hard to, especially when we're talking about, you know, Black folks here in America, it's hard sort of to get away from, I would think, when we're talking about speaking out, right, boycotting, you know, that is a part of sort of our historical DNA, the pushback, right, of being able to speak out. And if we go back, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, well, Black folks would be canceled all the time with things that they had to say. And so with that, and because I think one of the criticisms that came, I think Jonathan Majors, the actor who just recently was on Ebony, to cover Ebony,
yes,
right? And he had
yes.
roses all around him, and he had a pink shawl or something like that. It was on a pink couch. And conservative commentator Candace Owens says, again, emasculating men. So anyway, I'm sort of going in different places here. But what I want to get back to, and I think I want you sort of to expound on, within the African-American community, being able to have a voice, right? Democratizing sort of the social media, as bad as it can be. I would think that's a tenuous thing we have to watch, because you got to make sure, right, that Black folks can still have a voice to say what they need to say, even if it's not a popular thing to say.
Right, right. You know, and making sure that we have a voice on the issues, on the perspectives that really count, you know. So, I mean, there's also like...
Well, that's subjective, right, Charles?
It's a bit of subjective, but, you know, like, I think that...
Black
know, like,
folks, not a monolith, right? What counts? We got to then get into that.
But, you know, making sure that... But we do have, like, a very unique existential situation that we are in. I mean, it's very urgent right now. Some urgent times, some urgent things are going on. And so, no, we're not monolithic. Yeah, we're going to see things differently, or how we approach these complex problems. But, you know, there's different lanes of public conversation. There's really essential political and public policy conversation that, yes, our voices should not be silenced as a Black community. And we have some very important perspectives to bring to the table to solve these problems. They're not just problems, they're crises. While at the same time, yeah, you know, there's a lane of public conversation that's about, like, you know, gossip and speculation and social issues and entertainment. And that's a thing where, you know, like, people are going to have to be, you know, depending on the lane that they're in, they're going to have to be very careful about what they're saying. And as public figures, I mean, I'm on radio 3 hours a day on a major black radio outlet. But, you know, I talk about public affairs and public policy. But one thing that the radio station does before each and every broadcast on WURD, they put out a disclaimer. The views and opinions in this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views of WURD.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think other outlets like CNN, they need to start doing that, because there are a lot of people out here masquerading and saying that they're journalists.
Oh, well, that's a whole other show.
That's, yeah,
you're,
we can go right about that.
Commentators. Yeah. Let's be correct about that.
Well, I think, and too, in many ways, cable television has sort of just, you know, and we're talking, Professor Thomas, you have to talk to students and go, okay, this person, you know, look, journalism at first wasn't really even a profession. You know, you weren't really trained, and then journalism schools come about. But now when you look at these folks, you have to tell these students, this person really isn't a trained journalist. This person used to be a political operative. Now they're hosting this show.
Absolutely.
So they have a point of view. Mm-hmm. And so, you know.
How do you know the difference, right?
How do you know that?
I always use the analogy that, you know, when if you're a doctor, you know, you take the Hippocratic Oath. If you're an attorney, you pass the bar. And in each case, you put your hand on the Bible and you swear to do, you know, the greater good. What do we as journalists do? Right? And they're crickets. There is nothing there that qualifies us, except for the fact that we are beholden to being ethical. And that's why, whether it's the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics or NABJ's, we have to carry ourselves and be committed to not just being freedom fighters for freedom fighters of the First Amendment and defenders of democracy, but we have a responsibility as journalists of color to tell those stories that otherwise might not be told in an ethical way. And that involves how we go about our jobs, right, with the research and how we write. And so, yes, there are many people hiding behind all kinds of things, behind keyboards, that are writing and saying a bunch of nonsense. But, you know, they have an audience, and there's an audience. And I think we can thank our previous president for opening those floodgates.
Oh, boy, you just led me into something. I was just writing down a note sort of go there. So we're going to take a break, and I'm going to sort of take all that in so I can address that in a nice, calm, comfortable way. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Phone lines are open. Jimmy calling from D.C. We're going to get to you after we take this quick break. This is the Insight segment. We'll be right back right after this timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryan in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we're talking about cancel culture. What is it? What does it mean? Is it a good thing? Is it about accountability? Is it about punishment? Charles Ellison, I wanted to talk about the former president in this sense, right? He was taken off Twitter. Some could say he was canceled. Elon Musk now has Twitter, says, Donald Trump, you can get back on Twitter if you want. I think he said, you know, he's not going to worry about it. He doesn't want to get back on. Is that an appropriate use of the term cancel culture? Was the former president canceled? Would you see it that way?
No. The former president was a national security threat.
Okay.
Who was violating, you know, people need to understand this. Just read the Constitution, 14th Amendment, Section 3. He violated that. He shouldn't even be running for office again. And that same constitutional amendment, which was part of the Reconstruction Acts, which is what we as a community are living, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, but especially 14th Amendment, that was used after the Civil War to eliminate people who were engaged in treasonous, seditious, insurrectionist behavior against the United States. So that was an appropriate move to remove somebody like that from a widely used public platform who was saying things that were not just very hurtful, but were also profoundly destructive. And so that's a moment where, you have different types of conversation and voice. And there's voice where, people are having conversations. Sometimes hurtful things are said, and there's irresponsible comments. But then there are also comments by very powerful, influential people like presidents or like governors of a state like Florida who are doing things that are national security risk or that are fascist or that cause wars. And so steps have to be taken. People have to understand that. And we can make the distinction. The only reason that we're not making those distinctions very well these days is for two reasons real quick. One is because, once again, social media has completely muddled and distorted, the way that we talk to one another and mm-hmm. the way we have public conversation. And then two, 54% of adults can't read beyond a 6th to 8th grade level. Let's talk about that. mm-hmm. We have an illiteracy crisis, especially we have both an illiteracy crisis where people are not grasping very complex conversations very well because they can't read beyond the 8th grade level. Hmm. Yeah. And then, on top of that, we also have more and more of our young people are not being able to read at grade level. That's great. And that's a crisis. And people need to start knowing that and starting to address it, because that's doing is that it's making public conversation much more difficult because people can't grasp and they're not aware of what's going on around them.
Right. Professor Thomas, you wanted to follow up?
Yeah, I was just going to say, one of the main reasons, too, that Trump was taken off Twitter and other social media accounts was he was blatantly lying. He was, right. Talking about drinking bleach to take away effects of COVID. In the midst of the crisis where millions of lives could have been saved had he been responsible and not perpetuating complete ignorance and just complete disinformation. Disinformation is dangerous. And he was the biggest perpetrator of that. So I think that was a big problem. But he helped open the floodgates for all of that. The bar is now, as Charles mentioned, it's been set so low that so many people followed him. And that's where we see a Nikki Haley being able to make the comments that she made with no repercussions. Mm-hmm. That's where we see all these other lawmakers and politicians and public figures saying things that are blatantly not true, like elections are stolen. And those vulnerable people who may not have the wherewithal to know how to find the correct information and are listening to what they're hearing on radio and reading on social media that have that 6th grade education, they're being influenced by this negativity, complete nonsense.
And trying to cancel all of those, absolutely. So much coming at you, then that sort of canceling.
How do you, correct.
Yeah. How do you really do you whack-a-mole? You're trying to,
exactly.
And you really can't get to it.
Absolutely.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Angela is calling from Waldorf. Go ahead, Angela, with your question or comment.
Oh, it's just a comment. And
okay.
I was agreeing with, there was a question that was presented whether or not we should really go into the broader process, the perspective as far as how we look at things. Should we include historical references?
Mm-hmm.
And I think yes, 100%. Because so much disinformation, bad information is presented, and it's presented as being truth. And it's like, no. We need to look at, for instance, when we were talking about the black male, and it's like the emasculating of the black male. And it's like, no, we need to look at this in a broader perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at how they have been presenting us historically, and how, to me, that is still so damaging,
mm-hmm.
because other cultures, they begin to look at us like, oh, well, see, it is true about what they say. And then we have been fighting so hard, for a lot of the symbolism and a lot of how they portray us as being, how damaging it is.
Yeah. And I think that
we need to always analyze things, put it underneath the scope. Mm.
Well, thank you so much, Angela. And I would say, too, probably Jennifer and Charles, this is where I think in many ways the black media can play a role to constantly put that in context. When you're talking about emasculating, you're talking about hiding under the bed.
Right.
Because policies that said you can't have a man in the house. All of those things, you know, we have to be sure that we put those things in context when we're dealing with social media and then and they're attacking, you know, the British Vogue for this picture. And we have to go, wait.
Absolutely.
You've got to understand where we're coming from here. This is a picture. I would contend this is what you want. What you have in this picture of A$AP Rocky is just the counter to what the narrative has been. You got a black man holding his child, standing next. One guy said, "Why can't he stand next to the woman?" Look, and he's there, and the narrative is usually where the baby daddy.
Absolutely.
And so now we have the baby daddy there, and we're criticizing because the baby daddy is standing behind a woman who's a Billy, and he's a Millie.
Right.
But anyway, that's my commentary. Professor Thomas, you... And when we're talking about Rihanna and this British Vogue cover, mm-hmm. you know, you were saying that there's still some back to Vogue and the British Vogue.
Right. Well, you know, we have to remember this is the same British Vogue that just a year ago, February last year, published this cover of 8 African models on its cover. And it was making history the first time African models were featured. And then you had those saying, oh, it's a beautiful picture. But as you, it had a lot of backlash. And why is that? Because there were all but maybe one of those models was a dark-skinned model. You could not even see all of the features on some of the models. The face was black. The lips were black. It merged in with the background. You could not see the skin tones. You could not see the features of these models. And they were all wearing European wigs. So just by that, you know, virtue alone, yes, it was beautiful to see that they were there. But why were they in that type of a setting? Why cannot we be seen in all of our complexities
Why
and
do you
our
think
complexions
they were? Why do you think
with
they
that?
Did?
Well, you know, I always look to say, who's the artistic director? I know, like as I mentioned before, I think it's a Ghanaian brother who's the editor of British Vogue. But in that particular sense, what's the message? They said, I remember then reading that, you know, all the there were several other instances of that with other Italian models and other ethnic models. But why do the Africans have to be so black we can't see them? Unless they smile, right? You cannot see them. And I don't know the answer to that question. What are you saying? That's the question that we need to ask when these things are published and look beyond this pretty picture of these beautiful black women that you really can't see.
Well, there is so much more we could talk about. Sounds like we need a part two to this show. Charles Ellison, publisher of the B-Note, thank you so much for being with us, Charles.
Hey, thank you.
And Jennifer Thomas, associate professor at the Kathy Hughes Howard University School of Communication and the coordinator of the journalism program in that School of Communications. Professor Thomas, thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, February 23rd. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.